This is an Alerts USA Threat Journal, Homeland Security Weekly Update for Saturday, April 6th, 2024. This week in security news, on four occasions this week, Alerts USA subscribers were notified via SMS messages to their mobile devices regarding a variety of safety and security matters. Most important for this report, on Friday, subscribers were informed of an increase in the threat posture of U.S. diplomatic facilities and other interests across the Middle East region in anticipation of significant retaliation attacks by Iran for the April 1st missile strike on their consulate building in Damascus, Syria. Multiple arms of Iran's government have served notice that they would hold the U.S. responsible for Israel's actions. The U.S. has denied involvement, and Israel has not yet claimed responsibility, though Pentagon spokeswoman Sabrina Singh said this week that the DoD had assessed that Israel was behind the attack. Senior U.S. and Israeli officials currently believe that retaliation is inevitable and that assets and personnel of both countries are at risk. Israeli media outlets are reporting that 28 Israeli embassies and consulates around the world have temporarily closed because of threats. Earlier this week, Iran's deputy UN ambassador, Zahra Ershadi, told the Security Council they reserve the right to take a decisive response to the attack. The United States is responsible for all crimes committed by the Israeli regime, she stated, accusing the U.S. of trying to destabilize Syria and the region and calling it out for supporting Israel in its war with Hamas. Ershadi went on to warn that the consulate strike could spark further conflict involving other countries. Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah also issued a statement. Quote, "Be certain, be sure, that the Iranian response to the targeting of the consulate in Damascus is definitely coming against Israel." Unquote. The Damascus attack involved the use of multiple precision strike weapons, flattening the multi-story structure positioned between other diplomatic facilities. At least seven key Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps officers were killed in the strike, including Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahidi, a senior commander of the elite IRGC Quds Force, and another brigadier general serving as his deputy. Zahidi was the highest-ranking Iranian military commander to have been killed since Major General Qasem Soleimani, head of the Quds Force, who was assassinated by the U.S. in a drone strike in Iraq in January of 2020. Listeners are reminded that since Israel invaded Gaza following the October 7th attacks, Tehran-linked militants have attacked U.S. troops in Syria, Iraq, and Jordan at least 170 times, including a drone strike on a remote base in Jordan that killed three U.S. soldiers. U.S. citizens who are either in or planning to visit the region, to include tourist visits to Israel, Turkey, Jordan, Egypt, and Cyprus, would be wise to read the most recent State Department country report for your destination, as well as to get registered with the U.S. Embassy or consulate in order to receive official security updates and to let them know that you'll be in the country. If there is a major security incident, you definitely want to be on their radar. Next up, the CDC is warning doctors to be on the lookout for bird flu infections among dairy farm workers. The recommendation is in response to an outbreak of H5N1 avian influenza in at least 16 dairy herds in six states, which has led to at least one human infection so far. The CDC reports the individual known to have been infected, who the Washington Post reports worked directly with sick cows at the dairy farm in Texas, is recovering from very mild symptoms, effectively only conjunctivitis, sometimes called pink eye. For solid answers on what's happening with this potential public health threat, Alerts USA reached out to one of the nation's experts on the topic. Dr. Stephen Hatfill is a specialist physician, virologist, and public health consultant with a broad range of experience in infectious disease control, toxicology, and disaster preparedness. He holds medical fellowships from several institutions, including Oxford, the National Institutes of Health, and the National Research Council, for whom he studied the Ebola virus at the U.S. Army Institute of Infectious Diseases at Fort Detrick, Maryland. Dr. Hatfill also served in the Executive Office of the President of the United States as a medical and scientific advisor for COVID-19 response until the presidential transition in 2021. He is also author of the book 3 Seconds Until Midnight, which goes into significant detail about pandemic influenza viruses and how poorly prepared the nation is to respond to an outbreak. The book accurately predicted the SARS-CoV-2 outbreak just 2 months before its onset. Dr. Hatfill, thank you for joining us. The hype meter is rising on the topic of H5N1 bird flu. Cattle in at least 16 dairy herds in six states have tested positive. This week it was announced that a chicken farm in Texas was culling 2 million birds as a result of a positive test. Last week, a farm worker in Texas tested positive, developing no more than an eye infection. Can you help us understand more about H5N1 and what's happening with the animal virus spillover?
Good to talk to you. Beginning around 1995, something unusual began happening in the world. Up until that time, from 1918 to 1995, we had about four major Group A influenza strains that would come around, one of them or two of them every year, slightly mutated. In 1995, we saw this sudden plethora of influenza flu strains we didn't know were pandemic for man. They just suddenly appeared. Influenza is a disease transmitted by waterfowl, usually, and migratory birds, which some of them fly from pole to pole, like the Arctic tern. And it's an intestinal infection in birds, usually, mild, even asymptomatic. But there's live virus in their feces. So as they fly along, this is deposited. And it got deposited in the water troughs of the cows with this recent outbreak. This is a pathogenic influenza strain for birds, which is always a worry, because there's the risk if an individual catches a very high dose exposure. In the case recently, it was through the eye. Then it gets into the upper airway and from there into the lung. And you can get very, very sick with some of these strains. And H5N1, the original strain that broke out in Asia, had like a 50% mortality. So what's causing this, why it started in 1995, is multifactorial. Basically, it's the fact that our population as a race, as a species, seems to have crossed over some threshold. That and the fact that commercial chicken farms are now, I mean, some of these have a million birds, which is a very large cross-sectional target for any virus, any bird virus. And this is combined with the practice in Asia of polyculture, where they will mix the chickens with the pigs and have ponds with algae and fish, and they'll build the chicken coops over the pond. So the fecal material nutrients will get into the water and the fish feed on that. And it's a big cycle. And right up on top, somewhere in there, are the pigs. So what this does is facilitate what we call viral transfers or trafficking. And you'll get a bird flu, and let's say it gets into a pig that has a different type of influenza, usually fairly non-asymptomatic. And that one animal, those two viruses can start to mix because of the way the genetic instructions are arranged inside the Group A influenza viruses. It's like playing Go Fish. You know, I'll take one card here and two cards there, and you get a hybrid virus at the end of it with different capabilities to cause disease. And traditionally, mixing avian and swine influenza viruses, you end up with a fairly nasty, highly pathogenic strain. 1918, it was the H1N1 influenza strain that quite arguably was the third most lethal pandemic the world has ever seen, after the Justinian plague and the Middle Ages bubonic plague. We've been trying to prepare for this type of event for 30 years, and there's been some headway. In 2005, we actually had a pandemic plan, and it was based on early antiviral drug treatment. Unfortunately, the drug that had been selected, Tamiflu, didn't appear to work out as well as the drug company had promoted. There's about four now antiviral agents. But the problem with these is that viral resistance to these drugs can develop very quickly once an outbreak occurs. So what happens is, when we get an outbreak of avian influenza, the only real way to control the pandemic is to kill all the birds around the outbreak. It's called culling. And this is to the point now where I think you're going to see changes in the price of eggs at the store.
So with what's known right now about the current outbreak, is this something that the average listener who doesn't work on a dairy farm should be concerned about?
Concerned, but not worked up. This is what is called a spillover event. It was a high dose exposure by someone working with contaminated infected animals, got a very large dose of the virus, and it established an infection. For every virus, there's a certain minimal amount that you have to get into your upper airway to even establish an infection. Below that quantity of virus, you don't get symptoms, but your innate immune system, your lymphocytes, automatically go to work, and they get stimulated. And repeated low-dose exposures actually can give you what we call a herd immunity. And this is the goal for any pandemic, including COVID-19. The idea was for an early drug treatment, keeps people out of the hospital, and you want these repeated low-dose exposures in your population, so you build up a herd resistance as the human race. Single-dose vaccines, single-protein vaccines really aren't the answer unless you have them. You can immunize your entire population within a week or so. We've never been able to do that.
So in general, we are unable to vaccinate our way out of a pandemic caused by a rapidly mutating RNA virus.
No, and COVID-19 mutates twice as fast as influenza. So each year, what we have to do, as scientists, we have people overseas and samples are constantly being collected and analyzed, and we try to predict which is going to be the dominant pandemic strain that year for seasonal influenza. And we usually get it, we're right about half the time, because it takes that long to get the vaccine and get people immunized. It takes about 6 months. Even with Operation Warp Speed, it took 7 months. And these weren't even normal vaccines. So early drug treatment is the way, and self-isolation at home. Not lockdowns. The lockdowns were never in any pandemic plan ever. And unfortunately, we had some incompetent people come in and become part of a COVID-19 task force. But none of them had any clue what they were doing. And it turned into a disaster. The lockdowns actually prevented this constant low-dose exposure as the virus circulated through the U.S. population. It inhibited it. So when the lockdowns ended and the people all came out and started mixing, the virus is still there, but it's mutated. And now, you know, it's even worse. We ended up with the Delta strain in the summer. So shutting things down for a week or two until you can get the vaccine out there or the drug treatments and the government can actually find the car keys to the trucks. Okay, that's reasonable. But shutting down the whole country was never part of anybody's plan for a prolonged period of time. Children were immune to COVID-19. That's not always the case with influenza, but by and large, they were naturally immune to COVID-19. And the children get sick maybe for a day. A lot were asymptomatic. And we knew this by April, and they still went for these prolonged school closures and this stuff. Children don't pass COVID-19 readily to each other or to adults. They just don't have the viral load inside their bodies. If they're sneezing or coughing, there's just not a lot of virus in there. So this is different with influenza. The 1918 strain kind of left the elderly population alone, and it attacked the fit, healthy people. And it was during a wartime environment with dense crowding of young adults. And it was really bad. And it went after the kids.
Part two of this interview will be in next week's podcast, where Dr. Stephen Hatfill and I discuss America's state of readiness for the next pandemic. In travel security news, listeners are reminded that in addition to multiple security alerts issued by U.S. embassies across Europe in recent weeks, and last week's call by the Islamic State for attacks targeting Christians and Jews in the U.S., Europe, and Israel, there is also a U.S. State Department worldwide caution in effect, warning of the potential for terrorist attacks, demonstrations, or other violent actions against U.S. citizens and interests globally. The State Department is urging U.S. citizens who are outside of the country to exercise increased caution and maintain a low profile particularly in locations frequented by tourists, and to get registered with the U.S. Embassy or Consulate in the country you are in or planning to visit. This is as simple as visiting the Smart Traveler Enrollment Program website at step.state.gov. In addition to U.S. government travel guidance, it is also highly useful to visit the equivalent websites of the Canadian, Australian, and UK governments to see what those nations have to say about your destination, as the content of security assessments can and do vary widely. Links to those foreign government sites can be found in the weekly Threat Journal email newsletter. If you are not a Threat Journal subscriber, simply visit threatjournal.com to sign up. The publication is free, and a copy of this week's issue will be immediately sent to you via email. If you would like to receive Homeland Security-related threat and incident alerts on your mobile device, such as those mentioned in this podcast, visit alertsusa.com. Alerts USA continues to monitor the overall domestic and international threat environment and will immediately notify service subscribers via SMS messages and email of breaking incidents of national significance, as well as any new alerts, warnings, or advisories impacting the overall threat picture for American citizens as events warrant. This has been an Alerts USA Threat Journal Homeland Security Weekly Update for Saturday, April 6th, 2024.